Hi, it's Karen Webster for payments.com, and I'm here today with Michael Rietblatt, who is the CEO of Forder. Michael, thanks for joining me today.
Thank you for having me. It's always great talking to you on those shows.
Likewise, and we're here to talk about something that I think is fascinating. Forder has done an analysis of millions of transactions to give us a sense of what the fraudsters are likely to do this coming holiday season. As we know, so many shoppers will be shopping online, as will the cyber criminals. So let's get into it. So you did an infographic, which I'm looking at and which we will have on the site for everyone else to look at. And you categorized their wish list for the holidays. And what I found amazingly consistent with their wish list is that it's very similar to mine. There are Rolex watches, there are the Louis Vuitton handbags, there are diamond rings, there are computers, and all kinds of gift cards. So what's the deal?
You probably remember that for a previous study we did about the profile of fraudsters. Some fraudsters look for different things, and they have different motivations. And majority of the fraudsters, the reason they try to steal, especially for physical goods, is they want to fence it or they want to resell it to someone else. They don't need 100 Louis Vuitton bags. They may want one, but the majority of them, they want to resell someone else. And so that's why they are after high luxury, like expensive goods that are easily sellable in other places. For them, if they get access to a Rolex watch, they can. It's good enough for them to fence it even for 40 cents on the dollar, and they make a lot of money. If they get a MacBook Air, they can probably fence it for 95 cents on the dollar. They can even sell it on eBay for 1 or 2% below market rate, and someone will buy it immediately. So when you're looking at those types of goods, the most important perspective of a fraudster is how quickly and how easily can I sell it, and how many times can I do it? If they steal 100 Louis Vuitton bags, and they can only sell one a month, then they don't need the 100. So it has to be an item with a high demand. So they're actually counting, and this is probably especially for the holiday season, because since they didn't pay for the goods, they can undercut prices of every other retailer there and just have a promotion running for Louis Vuitton bags for 30 cents on the dollar, and they'll sell all of them.
Wow.
And we actually see a lot of times they stack goods in advance. So they will try to – we see kind of fraud attempts go up during October and November, or in kind of early November, because they want to get inventory, and then they upload it during Cyber Monday because it's easier for them to sell it then than during other times. They kind of ride on the same wave of e-commerce.
So that's really interesting. A couple things I want to drill into. So they are looking for things that they know are popular and can resell quickly, but they're also not buying them initially in bulk, although they may buy multiple watches. They're not going to go onto a site and buy 100 at a time. Is that right?
In 99.9% of the time, they'll fail. What they will do is they'll buy one, and if they see that it's successful, and I'm talking about sophisticated fraudsters, right? There are a lot of fraudsters that are amateurs, so they might try to buy 1,000 of an item, and then they'll get declined, and they'll try again, and then go away. But if we're talking about the more sophisticated ones and the successful of them, and maybe it's a good time to remind our listeners or readers that we're talking about organizational crime. There are people who are trained and they have resources and they have access to tools and to as many stolen credit cards as they want, and they can easily generate an identity in the U.S. and get access to an IP in the U.S. So they have all the infrastructure ready. What they're aiming at is how can I most effectively and most efficiently get access to as many goods as I can and then resell them.
So how do they know what kinds of things are going to resell? Question one. And and how did you come up with this list? What data did you analyze to produce the list of things that are on their most coveted list?
So we have two different sources of information about fraudsters. First is through all the transactions that we review, right? So we, maybe once again a reminder, so Forder works with online retailers, provides protection for them, from all kinds of online fraud. We review all their transactions and give them a real-time yes-no answer, providing kind of full coverage for any fraud attempt that derived from them. So we have a lot of data from many, many customers from many different verticals and sectors and sizes and advertiser types. So we look at our data, we know what are they actually attempting to steal, what are they succeeding in stealing, and then how does that fluctuate over time. And the second source of information, which probably way more unique if you compare us to everyone else in the industry, is we monitor kind of the deepest, darkest corners of the web when fraudsters first talk to each other and then transact. Mm-hmm. If I'm a sophisticated fraudster, in most cases, I will not hack into a retailer or a bank to get my the credit cards that I need. I will go on a dark web e-commerce website for credit cards, and I will buy them using Bitcoin. So we monitor those sites, and we monitor sites where fraudsters talk to each other, and they're actually having those conversations of, hey, what do you think will be an item that I can sell for the most money? They don't really compete one with the other, because for them, it's almost an infinite market.
Right.
So there's a lot of collaboration between criminals.
That's amazing. So they're giving each other tips on hot categories, hot items to buy, because there is really no such thing as competition, since there are so many outlets for them to try. But how different is this list from the list last year, for example?
So if you look at the kind of luxury items, they're the same, right? Rolex watches have been there forever, and Louis Vuitton handbags have been there forever, and different diamond engagement rings have been there forever. So that's, but they're all in the same in the category of it's a high-valued brand that I can easily resell. If you go on the electronic sections, it's also kind of the same old, so it's a new version of MacBook Air or a smartwatch or an iPhone or whatever the case is. What's interesting is we're actually seeing more attempts for what we call legitimacy boosting and business services. And so when I talk about legitimacy boosting, it's sales services, is Facebook driven or other types of marketing. It's already created accounts of other people, and they do it as a new means for phishing for information and for actually promoting their website when they are the ones selling the items. So if I'm a fraudster and I got access to a few thousand items and I want to sell them to the public, I can't compete with the legitimate web kind of e-commerce players on, I need buyers to find me, right? They don't have marketing people. So what they do is actually get access to accounts or just create new accounts on Google or any other marketing platform. Facebook is a popular one. And they start buying for a very, very high price advertising that leads to their site, because it's not their money, they don't really care. It doesn't have to be profitable because they need to generate traffic to their website. And then when we talk about the business services, it's the hosting services or even the website design platforms, because they need to create that website and host it somewhere. So it's a new infrastructure for them to offload the items they have stolen, and they need someone else to pay for it.
Interesting. So does this make it easier to be found, for them to be found, or no? Be found not by buyers of the things that they're stealing, but by people like you.
So I think it's a new challenge. So we know how to anticipate, because we track them on their communication. We track their communication. We know to anticipate those things. So when we work with a hosting service or with a SEO provider, we know to look for those things, which previously weren't attacked a lot by fraud. But when you talk about it makes it easier for, let's say, the government or the law enforcement to find them, it actually makes it harder. Because if they have easy access to hosting services, they don't have to hack it to servers. They just buy, with a stolen credit card, they buy a hosting account, and then they buy another hosting account, and then they tunnel the whole communication through that, and they can be in Estonia or in the Philippines or in any other country, and you will never know.
Wow. So the other category that I found curious is food. So you have pizza, Red Bull, which I think is kind of hilarious, and then hotel rooms. I guess I can figure the hotel rooms. But pizza and Red Bull, I'm confused. Explain.
Yeah, so this is actually a different type of fraudster. I don't remember the name we gave them in the study, but it's something like, let's call them pranksters for the sake of the conversation. It's young people that want to eat one pizza or order a bunch of drinks to their party and not pay for it. They don't do it repeatedly. They do it once in a while. And it became surprisingly more and more popular. In some cases, that's the very people that will say, well, you know, I just got access to a stolen credit card. Let's go stay a room at the Waldorf. They don't make money out of it. It's not their business. They just do it for their own pleasure.
Right. Interesting. Yes, the pizza and the Red Bull was sort of funny, although not funny at all. If you're the fraudulent credit card and you're seeing charges for pizza that you've never eaten and Red Bull you've never consumed.
Yeah.
So what advice do you offer merchants now that we understand what kinds of things they're after, which, you know, as you point out, is the kind of stuff that they've always been after. But now that they're using really different methods of not only buying these items, but getting rid of them, which, as you point out, is more difficult to track. What's a merchant to do in this situation?
So I think first, it's very important for them to remain agile and always question whether their current layer of protection or during their payment flow, fraud protection, is still relevant because things change constantly. People are after the products that they see that they thought are not of interest all of a sudden became interesting to fraudsters, and methods that previously weren't popular are popular right now. And different types of populations are trying to steal things. So if we go back to the last category that we discussed, when we started Florida, we actually haven't even considered that someone will try to pay for pizza with a stolen credit card. And then we found out that it happens, and it happens quite often. And I think retailers also need to constantly ask themselves whether what they think of the world is correct. I would advise them to talk to each other, to try to read kind of more up-to-date professional information and researches such as ours. And we try to publish things for the kind of general education of on a constant basis. And I would also think that, and this is one of our, I try not to market ourselves too much in those calls, but one of our strong suits, as we work with a lot of different customers, through the network we can identify patterns quicker. So I would advise retailers to go and find service providers that can give them access to a broader set of information to make their decisions upon. Because if they only look at what worked for them in the past, on what was a threat for them in the past, they will find that more and more of those black swans that are black swans to them, but are white swans to everyone else because they already knew about them.
Right. Well, it's interesting because, of course, as we approach the holiday season, where a lot of shopping will be done online for the kinds of things that frauds are also buying, the last thing merchants want to do is make it more difficult for their good customers and legitimate customers to buy the things they want, which are the luxury items and are expensive. Everyone's in a hurry. They're probably shopping, too, from their tablets or mobile devices. So it's a tough balance to strike. As you point out, information is critical in keeping the bad guys away and the good guys with a great experience.
I'll double down on that. And I will say that it's way more important for retailers. And I will still encourage retailers to go in that route and say, first, find the best way to serve your good customers. Don't treat your good customers with suspicion just because there are some bad customers. It is a threat, but it's a threat we can mitigate. We can help them mitigate that, but they should always focus on how can they treat, what's the best way to treat their good customers, and how can they expand their business. I'll give you an example. There is a very large retailer we're talking to, and they have, as part of their policy, you can return items, even items that you bought for a gift card, and get cash in return.
Hmm.
If you're a fraudster, that's a gold mine for you.
Of course.
Because you can go buy their gift cards, which is something that we know fraudsters are doing, go to the store or buy online with that gift card an item, go back to the store and get cash for it. It requires some more courage if you're a fraudster, and we already see that fraudsters are becoming bolder. But fraudster found a way to get very good service that this retailer offers their customers and turn it into cash through almost a no trace back to them, because they use the stolen credit card to buy a gift card, and then they use that gift card to buy somewhere else. So it's really hard to track them back. But I would still encourage retailers to do that, because I'm sure that, I mean, we know that the service they offer drove their sales up.
Interesting.
So I always say that the fear of fraud is greater in damage or more damaging to retailers and to buyers than fraud itself. We can take care of fraud. We need to make constant improvements on the service.
So if you were handicapping this holiday season as compared to last holiday season, is it likely to be one that will have more activity, is likely to be orders of magnitude more dangerous for merchants, or is there always danger and it's just, you know, degrees of difference that aren't perceptible?
I would expect way more fraudulent attempts during this holiday season than the previous one.
Why?
And of different kinds. First, we know that already fraudsters, as part of the kind of anticipation and that they're testing the waters of the EMV regulation, are going and testing and trying to realize, well, what is this online market and how do I make money there? Because I know that with the whole chip and signature and chip and PIN cards, I will lose my income. So they will test it more. And but additionally, I think in the last year, a lot of retailers did a very big step towards faster delivery and towards enabling mobile orders way more effectively. And for fraudsters, it's way easier. So they will go, there'll be less time for retailers to identify fraud and then recall the items that they just shipped, because they would like to have as many next day delivery or same day delivery, and you can't call it back. So if fraudsters will be able to use that and then make several orders instead of waiting for a week to try something new, they can get a few orders in before you even know.
Interesting. Well, Michael, as always, a fascinating conversation, because you really do look at the problem of fraud online very differently. And you do that because you access a number of data sources that provide the kind of deep insights that merchants really need to be protected. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you, and happy holidays.
Thank you, and to you too.